Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. And now,
check this out.
It's Crunch Time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CP on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they
going
to bust in here and arrest us?
It's Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score.
Yo. Welcome. And a couple more. So thanks for checking in. It's Wednesday, and I'd have the notification high on my phone because I was actually waiting
Tannenism.
To hear from someone. Well, anytime the notification goes off, that's a Tannenism?
Doesn't happen to my phone.
Well, nobody likes you and wants to contact you or set anything up or have anything to do with you. So there's a difference there. You know,
I'll be leaving. You can do the rest.
Earlier in the week or late last week, I was talking about what a great time of year this is for sports. Except like today, like the Wednesday before Super Bowl, the problem is it's too soon to be like, oh, we got to get delved deep into the Super Bowl. It's too soon. The weekend was far enough away where it's like, okay, we're not recapping. And contingent on geography, we live in Pac-12 country, and there's no Pac-12 action until tomorrow. So, I guess Arizona State and Washington State are playing tonight on ESPNU. And ASU with that big comeback, kind of a player. So aside from that, there's really not a lot going on. So I've delved deep into some college hoops, some Dusty Baker, some Marcus Spears comments on ESPN about Pat Mahomes and other things, as Mel Brooks said in Blazing Saddles. Let the guys worry about other things. How come this friggin' thing is warped? All right, but if you decided, well, I'll be perfectly honest with you, Stevie. I got things to talk about. You could do it. 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You can hit us up on the text line. 321-0824. You could also try us via the Twitter that these kids are just up in arms about it. I tell you, it's going to be the next big thing at 953 The Score for the station, at Sports Talk 953 for me and for Nick. Because, like I said, he needs friends and contacts. Just the human touch at Rick Notchers.
Come on, you're just ruthlessly roasting me here.
And for no reason whatsoever.
Oh my goodness, I play one drop and it's the end of my life. I'm just the saddest person on the face of the planet now. Oh man.
Somebody texted and said that you kids and your damn flying cell phone scooters. Yeah, this modern technology, by gum, is going to be our downfall. All right, let's start the program out with a telephone call. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. All your diesel needs since 1974, online, OregonFuelInjection.com. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How's it going?
Going very well, Steve Tannen. I want to say go Ducks for the women's basketball team. And what is your gut telling you about the women's basketball team beating Utah this week? Do you think they can slim chance beat Utah? Another thing is, please, everybody in Oregon, say good thoughts and prayers for us. Florida just has lightning right now in Florida, where I live. And there's a slim chance there could be a tornado hitting in Florida today.
Whoa. All right, Steven. Being somebody who spent a lot of time in Florida, always cognizant of hurricanes. A tornado? Yowza yikes. Utah, as far as if there's a slim chance Oregon beating Utah, I'm going to go the other way here. This Oregon team taking on a 500 Utah team who's 5-4 at home and has not beaten a ranked team from either poll and is 3-5 in league. And Oregon handled them pretty easily at MKA. I'm not imagining that. Wasn't that one of those weekends where Oregon had their way with Utah and Colorado? Or yeah, they beat them 88-51.
Was that the first weekend of the Pac-12 season?
Yeah, yeah.
That feels like it was 17 years ago.
17 years ago. This week.
17, kind of far away. 9 seems more reasonable there.
But anyway, that was the weekend. I think I would defy. So Oregon won by 58-37. I think we were talking about it in the aftermath that following Monday, that when you win the weekend by 100, it's a pretty successful weekend. 284-8571. Who's the dude I was looking at? I had it saved. It's going to take a second to load. Charlie Cream does women's bracketology. Because, as you well know, on January 29th, you better learn your bracketology. South Carolina, Baylor, Oregon, Louisville are the current ones. As far as, and that has Oregon, obviously, as a one back in Portland. And that's really important, man. If Oregon finishes one or two in the conference and one or two in the conference tournament, gets two home games, I'm sorry, with the way women's basketball, as much as the gap has closed between Earth and UConn, and as good as Baylor is, and South Carolina and Oregon and Mississippi State, you're just not going to see that 16 versus 115-14-3. Rare. We've seen it happen in the men's. We know that now. But and some people are like, shh, don't jinx it because, you know. But Oregon ends up in the top five and conference champ. They're going to Portland, and that's a Sweet 16 Lockerooski. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. Let's welcome Ed. Ed, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going fine, Steve. When I heard Steven ask the question, I thought he said UConn. And not Utah, but maybe you heard Utah, and maybe that is what he said, but I was thinking he was thinking ahead to next Monday.
Ah.
I got a little confused when you were describing the record.
UConn probably not 3-5 in conference.
right, that's what I was going. So I'm not sure, maybe he did say Utah.
You could be right, but I was just thinking next game in order, so...
Yes, no, you're right. It is Utah, and then we've got Colorado, which could be a little bit of a challenge, but I don't think either of them. I actually wanted to get your opinion on UConn. We jumped them in the poll, both polls, which sort of surprised me because they only have one loss, and it's to a pretty good Baylor team. So I'm just I still think we're on a mission, and I think that sort of it sort of has us. Beating UConn that beat us when Sabrina and Ruthie were freshmen when they had Brianna. So I think it's sort of, in Connecticut, I think it would sort of be a fun place, just like they got the Beavers this last weekend and got the sweep. I think it would be great to get the revenge back with UConn that happened in our Elite Eight game.
Yeah, the thing about UConn this year is, first of all, one of the reasons Oregon or Stanford would be viewed is the consensus is it's not even a question what the best conference is. And, UConn, who usually plays a killer non-conference schedule, aside from, like, Ohio State and I think Notre Dame, who, by the way, has dipped a lot, they, haven't really played that killer cutthroat schedule. And, though they did handle Tennessee. I thought interesting, Ed, to do kind of common opponents. You also saw UConn lost to Team USA by 15 points.
Yeah, and it was. I watched that game. It looked like they. First of all, I thought the Team USA team they played was not as good as the one we saw in Eugene. They weren't ready. You could tell they were rusty, and I think when they put the Jets on in the fourth quarter, it was pretty obvious that who the better team was. But I think that UConn team is an interesting one. I do think the Ducks are far better, but we really won't know until Monday. I had another question to ask you. I wondered if you knew about this. So, Ruthie and Sabrina, are they the first teammates who actually played played their whole years being a 2000-1000? I've been looking to see if anybody else has had 2,000 points, 1,000
as teammates?
Rebounders, teammates on the same team at the same time all 4 years.
Oh,
that's a lot of points.
That would also take a lot of research. I know Allison Lang. Yeah, I know Bev and Allison Lang played at the same time and were ridiculously productive. But as for coming together, playing together, leaving together.
Right, exactly. That was what I've been trying to figure out because I looked at the NCAA stats. The other thing I discovered, which is fascinating, is the only woman who's got 2,000 points and 1,000 assists, which Sabrina will be the second one, but the only other one is Vandersloot from Gonzaga.
Oh, really?
Kelly Graves actually coached. So I'm thinking, not only did he have one, he has two.
Yeah, not bad
Nobody
players.
Nobody else has any.
not bad players and a pretty good coach. Hey, good stuff. I appreciate the call, Ed. And if I misspoke when Steven said Utah, UConn, he's calling from Florida.
I heard Utah.
So did I. Because they also are playing them first. So I'm a very chronological person, as you all well know. I never lose my focus. I keep on the straight and narrow. I never deviate, digress, or lose my train of thought. What was I saying?
I think you were in the middle of apologizing for calling me a very lame person multiple times.
Oh, now we're putting words in my mouth. All right. All righty then. I did not see a box score for that UConn Team USA. They played only like 2 days ago, right? Did they play Monday, Tuesday? Monday. I'm not 100%. I know that it did mark the return of the magnificent Brianna Stewart. She ruptured her right Achilles, and it was almost 9 months to the day she returned, and she drained her first shot, a three-pointer, figures, right? 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So Dusty Baker, the candlestick maker, has reached a deal to manage the Houston Astros, and it seems like a really good decision. I mean, he's been an excellent manager. It's just, we understand that when he manages, you get to big games and then you lose in Buckner fashion. Just horrible, miserable, bitter endings are the Baker way. I kind of forgot, because by the time you get through his tenure of blowing the 2002 World Series, the 5-0 lead in game 6, then game 7. He, of course, was the manager of the 03 Cubbies the next year. So blow game 6 and 7 with a lead for the series. You come back, you're 5 outs from the series, and who was it that hit the pop-up that Bartman blew? Luis Castillo, I think it was. That's a good trivia question. So Castillo hit the pop-up, and I think he would then walk. Setting the stage. Remember, it was 3-0 when the inning started, and it ended 8-3. What'd you come up with?
You are correct. It is Luis Castillo hit a fly ball into foul territory, where Cubs outfielder Moises Alou pursued the ball and leapt near the fence in an attempt to make the catch. That's an actual line from the Wikipedia page. And in case you don't know what a catch is, there is a link to the Wikipedia page for catch.
Thank you, Thank you very little.
In baseball, a catch occurs when a fielder gains secure possession of a baseball in flight and maintains possession until he voluntarily or intentionally releases the ball.
I wonder if the Wikipedia page for NFL catch is probably 17 pages with a Venn diagram, and then at the end they're like, we're lying, we have no idea what a catch is. 284-8571. The Oregon fuel injection hotline. Another good trivia question. Who started that game for the Cubbies and was in absolute command on his way to the Hall of Fame through 7 1/3? Mark Pryor. We had him on a couple of years ago. He's working for the Pac-12 Network. He pitched at SC. What a terrific guy. Smart, great sense of humor. Obviously, kind of knows baseball. Anyway, back to Dusty. He was the manager of both of those. Then he was the manager of the 16-17 Nats, who got to Game 5 of the NLDS and lost both of those. And he was also, he got the Reds in the playoffs, I think twice. And of course they lost, not necessarily in horrifying fashion, but that's four teams he took to the playoffs, which, you know, let's not take that for granted. I'm just, when I see him, I get that Buckner feeling. Like something god-awful is going to happen to the teams. In 2016, Dodger fans will recall, they were down 2-1 and won the Nats. With Dusty as manager, lost Game 4 by a run and Game 5 by a run, season over. Then in Game 5, the bullpen let down, and Max Scherzer in 97, they won 97. In 2017, they won 97 games. But like I said, and how about the irony there? After Dusty leaves, the Giants, Cubs, and Nationals all end eternal droughts and win the World Series.
And it took all of them like a decade plus to like get back, because it took the Giants another 8 years to get back into the playoffs after that.
Well, they won it in 2010.
Right. It took, well, yeah, it took them eight. Well, I don't think they made the playoffs in, like,
yeah, didn't they in like the late 90s one time?
The Giants went through a drought. I feel like they might have made the playoffs again in 2003 or 2004, but they didn't do anything. And then they went through like a rut.
Not the 90s. You're right. I meant the mid-2000s or right before that, because obviously who cares before he got there.
Right.
So he left he took the Giants over the year Bonds arrived in 93. And then he left, like I said, after 2002, and they made the playoffs the next year in 2003. And then, of course, they hopscotched their way to three World Series in 10, 12, and 14.
He also has a tie on his record.
How does that happen?
In 2002, August 15th, the Giants and the Braves tied 3-3 at Turner Field.
Did they just get bored?
I don't know. I'm reading the baseball reference page on it, and there doesn't seem to be anything about what happened at the end of the game, why it just stopped. For some reason, the Giants had their at-bat in the top of the 10th, and the Braves never hit again. And they're just like, okay, we're done. We're not going to replay the game. We're not going to pick up the game later. We're done. We're calling it a tie.
So, the Dusty, the Baker, and the Candlestick Maker made the playoffs in 2010 with the Cincinnati and got swept by Philly. In 2011, not so much. 2012, they lost to the Giants in 5 in the divisional series because Dusty Baker. Then, they lost the National League wild card game because Dusty Baker in 2013. He's a terrific manager. He's a great baseball man. Also, the answer to a very good trivia question: who was on deck when Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record off of Alfonso Downing in April 8th, 1974? The answer is Dusty Baker. So you got that going for you, which is nice. You know, as a player as well, Dusty was a really good player. And mostly with the Doyers, obviously with the Braves. And he suffered the heartbreak of blowing the two games to none lead in 78. But then they won the World. So he won. He's not totally jinxed, but it has to be as a player when he helped the Dodgers win the 81 World Series. He was actually in 1977 against Filthy. He was the then you only had the championship series. He was the NLCS MVP, hitting a couple bombs, batted 357, couple of walks, 8 RBI, by the way. All right, so Dusty Baker, bad things are going to happen. And they're worse because it's on the tail end of a lot of good things. It's like, good, yay, woo! It's like the roller coaster, just, you know, you get stuck at the top and they have to use the crane to get you down. It was fun while it lasted, but it's going to end in bitter horror.
I was going to say, it's more like when a train in a cartoon nears a bridge and everybody on board realizes that they didn't complete building the bridge, but everybody was completely okay sending this train along this path that led to a bridge that doesn't exist for a train. It's just, we have to either all hop off right now or we're all just going to go careening into the bottom of this valley together. And most of the time, everybody just goes crashing into the valley together.
All right, let's not do that. I'm going to take a Pasadena on that. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Special thanks today to Tim and the folks at Papa John's.
Tannenism.
If you're looking for instant party, one call can do it all. Pizza party. Five large one-topping pizzas. Two 2-liter Pepsi products, serves 10 to 15, $45. How about a feast of favorites? Five large one-topping pies and three bread sides or three desserts, also serving 10 to 15 for $55. Locally owned, family run, Papa John's here in Eugene. We appreciate their longtime support of the radio programming right here on all sports, CBS Sports Radio, 95.3 The Score. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have an update and move it along on 95.3 The Score.
95.3 The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
For him to take advantage of it now, because you never know what's going to happen down the line. You know, I've always told some of these young quarterbacks, I mean, I'm the youngest quarterback to ever start in a Super Bowl and never got back. I played in a bunch of AFC championship games, and, you know, the 1 year I got hurt with the Achilles, we had a really good team that year.
Yes, we did.
I felt like we could have won that year. It's a shame, but, you know, that's the thing you got to take advantage of.
That's the gunslinger, Dan Marino. On Patrick Mahomes, the immediacy, how speaking from experience, he says you got to capitalize now, because he got there his second season in the league. At the time, he rewrote the record book through 48 touchdown passes, which held until 07, from 84 to 07, when Brady threw 50, I think. And but then they ran into that buzzsaw, what I consider the best top-to-bottom team in the history of National Football League, the 84 Niners. Then in 1993, he was talking about when he ruptured his Achilles in Week 6. The Dolphins were a good team that year. They were 4-1. They had only lost to the Jets, Jets in Week 2. But with Steve DeBerg, then Scott Mitchell taking over. Scott Mitchell, who joined us a few weeks ago on the Blower as a member of the Believe Podcast Network. They ended 9-7. And the, in a word, no. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It's kind of interesting. I mean, some people who work in media, be it for ESPN TV or CBS Sports Radio, talk about the greatest, and they'll say, well, he's the GOAT, she's the GOAT, that team is the GOAT. And it's like, shouldn't you preface that with, in my opinion, whether it be Brady versus Montana or, I don't know, the 72 Lakers versus the 96 Bulls, or, you know, pick 27 Yankees, 75 Big Red Machine, you know, greatest baseball team ever. So Marcus Spears is on ESPN talking Super Bowl, and very casually says, yeah, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. And I didn't really hear what he said after that, because I was like, I got inside my head and I was like, I would count down to 15, but that's a lot of dead air. And then I was like, that's assuming a lot. And he, and I was like, huh, is that kind of a matter of fact now? And I was like, I don't know. I, of course, you can make a case, but I think you would lose in court.
I mean, it's him, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, like Lamar Jackson as an MVP. He's the best player in football.
He had the best
this
year.
Right, he had the best
Deshaun
year.
Deshaun Watson in that conversation.
Deshaun Watson is also very good, but I don't think Deshaun is best in the NFL good.
Like, right.
Patrick Mahomes is at worst third.
Right. I was thinking third. Wilson, Rodgers are the only ones that can make a case because they've sustained.
Right.
And they've won Super Bowls.
Yeah. But even then, like,
but then again,
they have like almost an entire career to look back on, and you can say, "Wow, that's a great resume. These are great players. They did great things. They're constantly getting to the playoffs. They're adapting their game style, and they're leading a team, and they're doing all of these great things. And they've got years and years worth of, you know, memories and
resume.
Resume to pull from. And Mahomes has started for 2 years, and he won an MVP and led the NFL with 50 touchdown passes,
and almost then, made the Super Bowl.
Right."
Knocking
almost
off the dynasty.
Yes. And he, you know, gets the Chiefs, the ha-ha, lol Chiefs, never going to win anything Chiefs to the Super Bowl with Andy Reid, the ha-ha, never going to win anything head coach.
No, I agree. And like I said, my retort was, I'm going to need time. And I was like, so, right now, how comfortable are you saying QB1 NFL Pat Mahomes?
Very comfortable.
And if you had to win a game right now, sure, I'd take Wilson. I wouldn't be, if somebody said, you got to win, you get Russell Wilson, I'm like, oh, man. Or you got Aaron Rodgers. Oh, dude. But if somebody said, you got Mahomes, that would also bring a huge smile. And you know, I wouldn't turn down Lamar or Deshaun.
The way that he plays the game and the way he has field vision and arm strength, and he's
every intangible,
just mobile enough to like really keep defenses on their toes. He's able to throw the ball from any arm slot. Like, he's out there doing a bunch of stuff that like Aaron Rodgers was doing when he won an MVP in a Super Bowl. Like, that was Aaron Rodgers.
Magical.
Yeah.
It's stuff you didn't see very often.
He has also, this was from Lebatard's show from after the AFC Championship game. Patrick Mahomes and Peyton Manning have the same 40 time. Think about that for a second.
Peyton Manning. From when they came into the league?
Yes. Their combine 40 times were both like
6'9".
Nice. No, they were both in like the high fours. Like, they were both 4'9" or something like that. But think back to that touchdown run that Mahomes had against the Titans, and then imagine Peyton Manning doing all of those same things. It would take him a month. It would take him a month to do that.
As my buddy used to say back when it was still Marino, he would go, the Marino scramble, day two, stay tuned. Although, the 1 year he was with the Browns and had a good season, Derek Anderson scrambled for a first down, like 12 yards. It killed the quarter. It took that long. We were rolling on the floor. It was like, that is the Anderson scramble day two. Now you're talking. Anyway, are we missing something? 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody said, Nathan Peterman would like a word. And what's that word? Bad. That's B-A-D.
If there's anybody that you want to be as a defensive player going up against, Nathan Peterman, you want him at the front of that line.
I also wanted to hit on the passing of Chris Dolman, because sometimes it takes the older crowd to remind. He lost a 2-year battle with brain cancer. Jeez, only a year younger than me. And he was a first-round pick, top 5 pick. He went to Minnesota. Now, you're going back to 85. And, you know, he's top 5 all-time in sacks. He led the league in sacks with 21. At the time, before Strahan came along, only LT had recorded more quarterback sacks ever in a season. He had a surgical procedure back in 2018, and, you know, he was in the playoffs a lot. Of course, playing for the Vikings, they never made it. I mean, they are a study in frustration. But he played 17 playoff games. That's a lot. He made the Pro Bowl 8 times and 3 times an All-Pro, which is really, really, really spectacular. It is real, and it was spectacular. He made it into the Vikings Ring of Honor with their great tradition of defensive linemen like the great Alan Page and Carl Eller, Jim Marshall, Greg Larson, the Purple People Eaters, John Randall. And he's a Hall of Famer, 2012. For those who remember him and know the kind of player he was, would unsung, I don't know about underrated, he's a Hall of Famer. But the problem is, when people think of his era, there are two guys that are there, everybody's just like, yeah, he played with Reggie White and Bruce Smith at defensive end, which is like, okay, that doesn't diminish his greatness. I mean, the Minister of Defense was just, I don't know, you can make a case he was the most impactful defender, just as big a terror rushing the passer. And, you know, from the timing is everything. You know, one of the reasons I knew a lot about him, and of course, I understand sometimes I'll get a text from you guys or you'll call, and whether it be an older duck, regardless of sport, or an athlete from a part of California you went to, or those from the Midwest and Deep South, you get what I mean. But for those not familiar, I've said before, when I lived just outside of Philadelphia, it was King of Prussia. The more famous city, town that adjoins King of Prussia is Valley Forge. Yeah, that Valley Forge where Washington wintered during the Revolutionary War. Kind of famous. He went to high school there for a while. He's a Pennsylvania guy, York as well, played at Pitt. And like I said, he got drafted 4 in this year. Bruce Smith went 1. In another, also in that same draft, another Hall of Fame defensive end, Kevin Green, was taken. By the way, Jerry Rice also in that draft. And what?
I just got to the Pro Football Reference page, and it's so weird seeing number 1 overall pick, Hall of Famer, number 4 Hall of Famer, and then you're looking, you're like, okay, those are some names I've heard of. All right. Jerry Rice, 16th overall, one of the best football players ever, the greatest wide receiver ever, 16th overall.
Yeah, just look where he went to college. I mean, nobody ever heard of it. Was it Mississippi Valley State or something?
You are correct, sir. Yeah. They don't even have a link on Pro Football Reference to be able to look to his college stats.
No.
They can see Mississippi Valley State, but you can't look at his stats.
No, you got to go for, I think he played 2 years, like in 83 and 84. By the way, also, even though he wasn't in that draft, in 1984, the Eagles made Reggie White what you call a supplemental draft, but he went to the USFL their year in 1984, played with the Memphis Showboats. So what's so funny?
Memphis Showboats.
Isn't that great? The Philadelphia Stars, the Houston Gamblers, the New Jersey Generals. Trying to think what the hell else. Or the LA Express. That's where Steve Young signed out of BYU before he started the miserable part of his NFL career with Tampa. But So his first year, a future Hall of Famer, was also the first year in the NFL of as great of defensive ends as we've ever seen in Bruce Smith and the Minister of Defense. And by the way, you think about the peers of his, also Howie Long, Charles Mann of Washington. But from that time, you think a defensive end, and it's Smith and White. But make no mistake, Dolman was one B-A-M-F. He was a wrecking crew. And was really sad. Well, obviously, I'd be kind of a jerk if I wasn't sad to hear of his passing. You know, it's one of those things where first the news hits like 2 years ago, and you're like, oh, man, that sucks. And, you know, you hear brain cancer, and you hear about the surgical procedure. But then you don't hear about it for a year, 18, 20 months. And I'm sorry, but if it's not personal and you don't live in the city and you're not related or do business, you kind of forget it, because life kind of hits you across the head with a 2x4 with news every single solitary day. But yeah, for those who saw him play, any Vikings fans out there, I don't have to tell you to get to watch that dude ball week after week. You know, going against the Pack, the Bears. And I guess I wonder how those Minnesota teams did against the 85 Bears in 1985, his rookie year. I mean, the only team to beat the Bears that year was that Monday Nighter against, ironically, a guy we mentioned earlier, Dan Marino and the Dolphins, and the Marx Brothers. Who's the Marx Brothers? Mark Duper and Mark Clayton. Karl Marx. Yeah. Good. No. Harpo, Zeppo, Chico, and Groucho. I think there was also Gummo. I think there were five Marx Brothers.
No, that's a fake name.
Go ahead. Look at
Gummo Marx?
I think
no,
so.
Thank you. No, thank you.
The two games the 85 Bears played against Minnesota, they beat them home 33-24, and then at Soldier Field 27-9. Did you get it? Did you find it?
Yeah, his name is Milton Gummo Marx. How do you get the nickname Gummo?
I don't.
Hey, Dummo. No, you're too good for a Dummo. You're a Gummo. Get out of here.
Oh, man. That's funny. Gummo. By the way, go ahead, for money for trivia. Name the fifth Marx brother. There you go. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Before we take a break and get you ready to exchange things, if you listen to us, you know one of our fave sponsors is Big Al State Farm, and they want to talk to you about protecting your family. He and his team will take an in-depth look at all your insurance needs. Big Al knows how to protect you and your family from the consequences that could happen if you don't have proper coverage. Call them 686-1522. Stop by their office located on Cal Young in Eugene, right next to the Dairy Mart. And if you get a quote and you mention this ad, you can do some good. Big Al, very civic-minded gent. He'll donate 20 meals to Food for Lane County on your behalf. Again, the phone number, 686-1522. And check it out now, BigAlEugene.com online. So we'll break, we'll come back, we'll pay homage to the Bell. The Crunch Exchange is next, 95.3 The Score.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Respect thy bell. Time for the Crunch Exchange. It's how we wrap up Wednesdays during crunch time. I bring up a prospectus from the world of sports, and Steve then tells us if he is buying or selling on said prospectus. And we'll get to a quick non-NFL question here, getting ready for superb Owl Week. Alexander Ovechkin is the best goal scorer of his generation. As an 18-year-old rookie, he very casually scored 52 goals, and now in his 15 seasons, he's got eight seasons with 50 or more goals. close. He also had one with 49, so I'm going to count that as a 50-goal season, too.
No, he hasn't tied Bossy yet.
I'm counting it as a 50-goal season.
Nope.
He sits at 692 goals in his career, and people are starting to look at the top dog, and if Ovi will ever get there, the great one, Wayne Gretzky. And when you look at the great one's hockey reference page, it's insane. There's a five-year stretch from 81 for 80 through 86 where he had 92, 71, 87, and 73 goals, leading in goals, assists, and points in basically every other statistical category for that time. It's why he has 894 of them. Gretzky had everything: the goal-scoring ability, the vision, enough speed, and the big one, health, which Ovi has as well. The only problem here might be pace. After 15 seasons, Wayne had 803 goals, and by the end of this season, Ovi's going to be somewhere in the low 700s. Luckily, Ovi does have his health. He doesn't really have to rely on his speed to score, and his shot mechanics are perfect, where he can basically play until he's 50 and Jaromir Jagr this thing all the way to the top. The prospectus: Alex Ovechkin will pass Wayne Gretzky as the all-time leader in goals scored.
By the way, what was the comment the other day? If Gretzky never scored a goal, he still would be the all-time points leader.
Yeah, he's
that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Yes, it is. Yes.
And only Bossy has 950 goal seasons. B, no, sell that easy.
Counts in my personal record book. Players around the NBA are continuing to honor Kobe Bryant in various waves. We've seen the 24 and 8-second clock violations, players wearing 8 and 24 during warm-ups, and players even switching their number to an 8 and 24, and now players are actually switching away from wearing 8 and 24. We've seen tweets for the All-Star game that one team should wear 8, the other should wear 24, and a bunch of other things that are all going on and how to honor Bryant and his career in the NBA. But the prevailing movement right now is for players to no longer wear either of the number that Kobe wore in honor of him, and people are saying that 24 should be retired league-wide. This has happened in baseball to honor Jackie Robinson, and the NHL has not really formally retired 99 in honor of Wayne Gretzky, but nobody's worn it since he did in 1999, and it seems that if the NBA players wanted to wear the number of a player that inspired them when they were young, that kind of makes sense. The Dallas Mavericks have said no one will wear 24 for that franchise, and like I've said, the players are starting their own movement, so is it time for the league to step in? The prospectus: the NBA should retire the 24 league-wide.
Not even a chance it's going to happen. Sell it.
Now to the NFL. Matt Ryan is the highest-paid quarterback in the league, and it sounds strange, but the numbers do not lie. His contract is worth $150 million. Behind him are Russell Wilson with $140, Jimmy G, $137.5, Matthew Stafford, $135, and then the two Cal guys, Aaron Rodgers and Jared Goff at $134. One of these is not like the other. Matt Ryan won an MVP. Russell Wilson is constantly playing at an MVP level. He's got the Super Bowl. Aaron has the MVP and a Super Bowl. Even Goff and Jimmy G now have Super Bowl appearances. And Patrick Mahomes is next in line to get his payday. The first-round pick in 2017 is coming off his rookie contract, and at 24, he's got an MVP, led the league in touchdown passes, threw for 5,000 yards, two consecutive AFC Championship games, and now a Super Bowl appearance. He's easily going to be jumping into the 130 range because he's starting off his career with Aaron Rodgers-level expectations, and he's won more playoff games now than Matthew Stafford and the Lions really ever will. It all comes down to how high GM Brett Veach will want to go for the Chiefs. The salary cap in the NFL makes things slightly more complicated than just pay the best quarterback all the money in the world, but the Chiefs have a lot of cap space, and no one's making more than $17 million. There's room for like two or three Brinks trucks to get backed up for Patty Mahomes. The dude dislocated his kneecap this year, barely had a limp, walked off the field in his own power, and only missed two games. He's worth every penny. The prospectus: Patrick Mahomes will get a $200 million contract.
Weebles wobbles. That's this offseason?
Yes, he's due for it. Or a franchise tag, and then you wait, and then you sign to an extension. They'll play. There's a bunch of cap math involved that is kind of complicated as well.
It is the Hunt family. They've never been known to go off the charts free agent-wise. They've been more, we'll trade for Montana, we'll get Steve Bono, Elvis Gerback will be here any minute. But you know what? When you look at what these guys are making, are you out of your minds? I'm going to roll the dice and say buy that. And that's a real buy.
What does that equal? More money, more money, more money.
Staying with Mahomes, he's got another impressive feat going on. He's yet to throw an interception in his playoff career. Through four games, he's thrown 142 passes, 11 touchdowns, zero picks. Brady had three in his first six games. Manning had six in his first six games. And there aren't that many other great names that have played in the playoffs and gone this long without an interception. Oddly enough, the only guy who's thrown the similar number of yards and attempts, Jeff Hostetler. Again, we're talking about a guy that we just said is worth a $200 million contract. Mahomes is taking on a tough 49ers defense with a tough defensive line that forces pressure. Pressure causes errors, and errors are interceptions. The 49ers got two picks against the Packers in the playoffs. They had five against Aaron Rodgers when they played in the regular season. They're a very good defense. This is the unstoppable force of Patrick Mahomes taking on the immovable object of the 49ers defense in Miami. The prospectus, Patrick Mahomes will throw an interception in the Super Bowl.
Whoa.
Yes.
I'll buy that.
Oh.
I'm leaning Frisco, by the way. Right now, if somebody said, what are you doing? I'm dumping half my stash on San Francisco. And maybe the under.
What are you doing?
That's a different segment. Last one here. The quarterbacks get all of the love, and they're pretty well deserved, especially the ones in this matchup. But the skill players in this game are insane. Raheem Mostert rushed for 220 and four touchdowns in the Packers. Damian Williams is a fantasy dud, but he's been a monster in the NFL playoffs with four total touchdowns. George Kittle, Travis Kelce, two of the best tight ends in the NFL. Deebo Samuel is coming into his own as a Niners receiving threat. Tyreek Hill, off-field scumbag, one of the fastest people in the NFL with a quarterback with an arm that's strong enough that he can't really even outthrow him. It's insane. Plus all of the defensive players on either end of the team that might end up taking this game and coming away with a rare defensive MVP as well. The prospectus, Super Bowl 54's MVP will not be a quarterback.
Wow. There's a lot of talent on there, man. That's a really good question and an excellent presentation, making up for earlier when I was all over your case. I'm going to buy that one.
Whoa!
All right. That wraps up Crunch Time. Looking ahead to Sports Talk, I've got, like I said earlier, it's a very lully day. There's some NBA, there's some college hoops, there's a Pac-12 game with Arizona State, Washington State. But starting tomorrow, you know, it's officially Super Bowl weekend. You've got some huge games in league in the NBA around the country. I want to talk a little bit more of Hot Stove and Peyton Pritchard. His viability as National Player of the Year, Andy Katz came up with a list of some of his top contenders, about top 11 or 12. I didn't get the exact count. And Pritchard is in the running, and it's pretty heady stuff. So we'll get to that as well. Hang tight. Sports Talk is next. 95.3, The Score.
This is stupid!